Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Community Matters here on 103.7 WEEI. I'm your host, Scott Cordesci. Glad you could join us. Community Matters is the show that comes your way each and every Saturday morning and keeps you in touch and up to date with many of the great things happening in and around our communities here in the state of Rhode Island, also in eastern Connecticut and in southeastern Massachusetts. And this morning, it gives us great pleasure to welcome to the program the CEO and president for the Elisha Project. He is also a retired Marine veteran as well, and the father of seven, George Ortiz, is our guest. George, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Scott. Happy to be here.
Well, George, thank you for joining us, and more importantly, thank you for your service. I know you are a disabled Marine veteran, as I mentioned, a dad of seven as well, but thank you for your service to our country.
You're welcome, sir.
So, George, tell us about the Elisha Project. Tell us what this is all about. I know you and your wife, Carrie, started this, what was it, back in 2011. Tell us why you started it and tell us what it does and tell us how you've grown over the years.
Absolutely. And I try to make it as brief as possible for our listeners. But in 2011, my wife and I started this project because we ourselves, 4 or 5 years prior, had faced some downturn in our lives. We moved here from California. We had a successful company at the time. Grandma was in Rhode Island and she was ill. So we came to help her. She had cancer. She only had a couple years to live. As who would know that rice and beans will give you another 20 years. The lady lived till she was 94. But we came here with the hopes of, one, that she would get better, but that we would be able to assist my family that was here because I'd been gone a long time. And in the course of 4 years, my wife and I lost our company. We lost everything we had built in California. We lost all our contracts. And really, it was not mismanagement, but there was no one there doing what they were supposed to do. Long story short, when we went to look for help, there wasn't a lot of help. So when people think of people in need, you always think of what's visible to you, the people you see at crossroads, you see the people that may live in different neighborhoods than some of us. And I grew up in those neighborhoods. So there I was at 33, successful CEO, back to where I started, just like when I left New York without a dime to my name. And when we went to see relief agencies, they'd always ask for your previous year's taxes. Well, my previous year, I'm not going to tell you how much we made, but it was a lot more money than most people, enough for a couple of families. And people never think about the fact that if you have a mom and a dad who are both working, and let's say they're both college graduates, just like Carrie and I, and they each make decent money, one of those lose their job, what happens? How do you go somewhere when you live in Rumford or on the east side, or in any, and you have a $400,000, $500,000 home, and you have two mortgage payments, and you got kids in school? What happens then? That's really losing everything. Because I know what it is to be dirt poor living in the housing projects of New York. When we lost something, well, we were accustomed to it. It wasn't such a gigantic loss for us. But when you lose everything that you've built, and you have two children, it devastated us. And we went to live at the mercy of my sister in Atlanta. And during that time, I decided, forget the college degree. I'm going to go to theology school. I'm going to go to divinity school, and I'm going to get a doctorate in theology, and I'm going to do something else with my life. Well, that lasted about 2 years before we received an opportunity to help run a nonprofit in Rhode Island. I knew nothing about nonprofits. It was in Central Falls, a place that I detested because that's where my family originally came from, my dad's family. We went up there, we did that, and I fell in love with this idea of how do we build a better mousetrap. And I always say that nonprofit, that's a tax designation. It's not a mindset. It shouldn't be a mindset. The NFL is a nonprofit. Universities are nonprofits. Hospitals are nonprofits. So business acumen does come into play.
Right.
So it was in the course of doing that that my wife said to me 2 years into that, you're doing the same exact thing. You're wearing suits again. You know, people like you again. You're starting to earn a little money. You're not helping anybody. I think we need to go to California and get you away from this, because I think that's how we ended up here in the first place. And one of the things that kept us on track was this little thing called the Fox Point East Side Little League. I just happened to live in Oak Hill in a rented apartment at the time. And my kids were going to the JCC on the East Side.
Yep.
And here was this little league full of people from the East Side that I would have never thought would have befriended me, but they did. And I started coaching, and then I became, you know, one of the board members. And I had this group of people that was strangers that started saying, hey, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm making lunches and I'm taking them to Crossroads on Saturdays. Well, we'll sign up. And then Aaron Valeno and all these different people started signing up. And I told my wife, I think we have something. I think we should do this every Saturday. So the growth of EP or Elijah Project was from 2011 to 2015. We never missed a Saturday. When COVID came, we were 579 Saturdays without ever missing a Saturday. But in the interim, this thing that started out with 250 lunches had grown to picking up from Brown University with the Food Recovery Network, picking up with Johnson & Wales, picking up from URI, picking up food from all the places on Thayer, Eastside Pockets, and then repurposing all this food and making boxes for families that were in need.
Wow. I'm stunned by your story, and I love your story. And I can relate to your story from a standpoint of, you know, where your life was turned upside down. I was in the radio business full time. And in 2008, the company that owned the radio station that I was working for decided we're going to change formats. We're all out of a job. So I've got a wife and two young kids. My wife was a homemaker and doing a great job raising our kids. And I've got this big mortgage. And I'm like, well, holy cow, what am I going to do? You know, I mean, obviously, I kind of worked my way through it and I remade myself. I told my wife, I said, look, if you want me to stay in the radio business, we may have to uproot the family and move somewhere else. Or if you want to keep your roots down here, I'll try to remake myself professionally. And she wanted to stay here with our two kids, you know, just starting school. And so, you know, it is what it is. But I can understand how unsettling that was for you and Carrie and your family. But for you to turn it around and turn it into what you have, man, you hit it out of the ballpark. I mean, congratulations to you for doing what you have done.
Scott, you hit it on the nail. You're exactly who I'm talking about because, you know, to give you some background, my father was killed in Pawtucket in 77 as a 25, 26-year-old man, doing things that he probably shouldn't have been doing in places he shouldn't have been doing. And that was my grandmother, his mom, taking him from Brooklyn and saying, hey, let's move to a quiet place like Rhode Island. You're going to get killed in New York. So the man dies, loses his life. Yeah. And then my mother goes to jail when I'm 15 for manslaughter. Oh. Right. So she's doing 8 to 15 years in jail because on her watch, my youngest brother died of cases that were brought on by malnutrition and some other stuff. So the families spread out. Sisters go to youth homes. I go live wherever I can with my brother. And you take all of that. And then I start playing baseball and I say, well, this is it. I'm going to play ball somewhere. This is when third baseman was still short, right? We think about Mike Schmidt and, you know, Greg Nettles. I was 5'10 at best if I stood on a box, but I was a great, you know, corner infielder and I could hit anything. I was like Rod Carew. Couldn't hit a home run to save my life, but you couldn't get me out. And then in 87, I get shot coming back from practice randomly. right? Never been solved. I was shot in the back. It hits my collarbone, goes out my bicep. Left arm is useless. So, I mean, it sounds like a bad movie, Scott, but that is kind of what drives me. All these things are why this Elijah Project that started with 200 lunches now does 100,000 pounds of food biweekly.
So I understand you were looking to get a House Joint Resolution passed to appropriate $2 million for Elijah Project. How did that go? How is that going?
Well, that did not pass. And I'm learning quickly that, first of all, I wanted to make clear that the $2 million wasn't for Elijah Project. I think there was like a $400,000 carve out for the Elijah Project. But that's not how politics go. That doesn't happen on the first pass. I'm learning, right? This is a different world than I can do corporate. I can do contract negotiations. The state house is a whole different animal, as you guys know. And that got a hard no. I think out of that, we just received $10,000 just last week. But it's a learning process, right? We have some very good partners, Brown University, all these schools. You say, well, how are these schools good partners? When COVID came and all the students went home, I called all the universities. That was the explosion of the Elijah Project, calling schools and going, okay, you sent them home. I know you purchased 6 months in advance. What are you going to do with all the food?
Brilliant.
And URI goes, and Brown goes, well, do you have a refrigerated truck? I said, absolutely. I said, do you have a refrigerated warehouse? I said, absolutely. A flat out lie. I had neither. Neither. But I went to divinity school, so I was speaking faith, like I was speaking forward. I was forecasting what was coming, right? And the funny part of that story that I think the listeners will absolutely understand is that I went back to that corner where the homeless were, and I knew the one guy that had a CDL license. I said, I'll give you $100 for the day to come with me down to Warwick, go to Ryder, pick up this truck, and head off to Brown and to URI. And he said, great, I'll take it. So he came to me halfway through the ride. He goes, you know, you don't need a CDL to drive these trucks, right? But that's what we did. And we ended up picking up year end from Brown. And it was amazing. It was the food that came out of all of the big shindigs, right? So I had all this meat and then Johnson and Wales. And then I had Brown. So the problem I had now was that I had a 2,000 square foot space with all this meat that needed to be quartered. And I didn't know how to do it.
Yeah. So what did you do? Like, where did you store it? How did you distribute it so fast? What did you do?
So again, I was a Marine, right? And logistics is part of how do you get a whole MAG, a whole Marine aircraft group from here, from California to the Middle East, to Abu Dhabi. I was involved in all that stuff. So I said, let me think this way. Let me pick all this up. Let me bring it back to East Providence, Rumford, put it inside this 2,000 square foot room that I have, and let me blow out the compressor on the air conditioning because I'm not too bright. Turned everything up, and then I called Johnson & Wales, and I said, hey, don't you have a chef's consortium that has to do, like, volunteer hours? They said, yeah. So Chef Lucier said, what do you need? I said, well, I got, like, 10,000 pounds of meat that I need to be cut and bagged because families can't quarantine in space if they have no money. So why don't we... So he started that, and every day for about 3 months, two chefs came in. They were like Jersey Mike's. They cut the salami. Brown had the steaks. They cut everything. And then we had families coming in and making boxes for these families.
Wow. Wow. All right. So you have a website, ElishaProject.org, E-L-I-S-H-A Project.org. When people go to that website, what can they expect to see? And I think more importantly, you know, if you need help, how can people help?
So on the website, you can see what we do. Like right away, you're hit with this amazing video that was made not by me, but Slate and Steer Media did this for me almost for nothing. It's like a professional grade movie on what a day was like in the Elijah Project. Under the get involved, you can volunteer. Right. So we have volunteers every single day that now come to Apex. So now we're in 100,000 square feet and we've been in that for quite some time. Now we're in the warehouse business. We're a logistics company now that has 8 trucks, 15 trailers. We do 60 deliveries a day to private homes. We do 30 deliveries a week to nonprofits. We act more as a distributor now than we ever have before.
All right. So talk to us about your different programs, Food Rescue, Bodegas, Saturdays, Fort Veteran Street Kitchen, et cetera.
Right.
Tell us about these different programs that you operate.
Okay, we're going to stick to three because we're going to drive people crazy. The EP Bodega program is an amazing program that we're launching in Pawtucket. And the idea there is going into a school where kids are in need. Nobody talks about these things. When I was at Johnson & Wales, I went back to Johnson & Wales in 2019 before COVID as a 50-year-old to get a degree in narrative filmmaking because I just love filmmaking so much. And there I was with 18-year-olds. So I had guys that were Division II lacrosse and Division III, and they smelled bad, some of them. So I asked one of the kids, I said, what? You can't afford deodorant? He's like, I'm on scholarship, man. I barely can eat. And that stuck with me. I said, wow. So I contacted Johnson & Wales and said, can I put an EP bodega in your place? He said, what is that? I said, I just need like two walls and some drawers. I will put shelf-stable food on one side. I will put hygiene products on the other side. And then on the last pegboard, I am going to put things like living room sets, a dining room tables, dining chairs, all these things that I have in my warehouse. And when the student turns it over, it'll say 20 hours of service. That's the price. So the EP Bodega program started because of my classmates at Johnson & Wales, and now it's at Times 2 Academy, it's at CCRI and other places.
Wow, that's really cool. All right, tell us about the other ones you want to talk about.
The share market. So people always say, well, you know, the share market looks like it's not inclusive because you have to have a car to participate. So when I do that, we have two things that are primary programs. The pop-ups, which means like this Saturday, there'll be four pop-ups in Rhode Island. That means four different crews of employees are going to head out in a van and or truck, set up two tents, and give out 65-pound bags full of vegetables and meat and another bag of hygiene products at no cost at all in four different locations. They get to pick. That's for the walk-ups. That's for people in the heart of Providence, people in the heart of Central Falls, Pawtucket, East Providence, all these different places, Warwick, you name it. Then the share markets are for people like me. And when I say people like me, when I lost everything, I still had a car. But what I remember the most is how I lost my dignity by the third time I knocked on a door and they said, you made too much last year. Sorry, we can't help you, sir.
Yeah.
So the share markets are a way for families to come through in a drive-through fashion, open up their trunk, no questions are asked, there's no ID checked. People always say, well, how do you know they need it? And I say, because they're online. You have to have some kind of audacity to bring your children, especially, and I want to be real 1970s misogynistic, to be a grown man with a college degree, walking up with your two kids asking for food is the most humbling experience I've ever been through.
I can imagine.
So for these people, what we do is we just put it all in the trunk and they keep moving. It's one of our biggest projects, one of our biggest programs. This 24th, every Christmas Eve we do one, there'll be 1,000 families. We start at 8:30 in the morning. The cars line up at 5:30 in the morning.
Wow.
And people say there's not a problem. Well, Ed Fitzpatrick from the Globe was jogging this summer and he was all the way by the new soccer stadium. Apex is about 3 miles away. He runs into a line that he couldn't cross. So being a good reporter, he just jogs all the way down the line till he ends up in my building. And then he calls me. He says, George, this is worse than COVID. I said, well, no kidding. Who do you have to be? Where do you have to be to sit online for 3 hours and not know what you're going to get?
Wow.
That's what that program is. And we do that. We're going to do it this Christmas Eve. And I do that for the families that were like me.
Yep.
Like they weren't, you know, and people say, well, that's somebody else. Well, it might be you. It might be you, because if I can take away $300 out of your monthly bill this month, because you're going to come to me, you're going to get everything that you buy at CVS. You're going to get everything that you can buy at Costco. So that leads me to the next thing, which is we don't just do food. We do as much furniture and household items, including refrigerators and beds, as we do food.
Okay. Where do you get the stuff? Do people just donate it to you? And how are you supported, George?
Two great questions. One, how do we get the stuff? Well, I'm not going to give everybody the blueprint, but let me say that I spend my day calling every retailer you purchase from. And what I say is, give me your returns.
Yeah.
Give me your returns. Let's work out a program together where I will send a trailer to go pick those up. So you're not giving to every church and nonprofit. I will come back and I will reassemble these things and give them out as a distributor. So I have Costco, Walmart, CVS, and a bunch of schools. I have 99 cent stores. I have Pepperidge Farm. So we will go as far as 300 miles to pick up. Wow. Stop and Shop's a good partner. Stop and Shop last week gave me 700 turkeys right before Thanksgiving, 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
And how do I get rid of it? Networks, right? We don't single source anymore. I don't have wraparound services. This is the individual person cannot walk into my place and shop.
Yeah.
I have case managers, social workers, nonprofit organizations, churches. These are all members. What I've done is I lived the life on their end, and now I just said, I'm going to be the distributor. I'm going to spend my time bringing this stuff in, sourcing it, running a logistics company, because that's what we are. We also do contract work for the state. We also do contract work for a couple of companies, and that's how we are funded for the most part. So our mix is something like, I would say 50-50, if not 60-40, 60 being contract work.
Wow. Wow. All right, George, we could literally go all morning,
yes,
but we have time constraints. In closing, you know, what do you want the message to be to our listeners? And I guess more importantly, again, how can they learn more about you and how can they help if you need help?
Absolutely. We always need help. You can go on the website, ElijahProject.org. You can find us on Facebook, Facebook.com, The Elisha Project. We're on Instagram at Just The Elisha Project. You can always volunteer. I always tell people, they say, I'd love to send you a check. Checks are great. Relationships are better. Come bring your family, because that is how we survived all these years. There weren't people that were in need walking in my door. They were the well-to-do people. They were the people with college degrees. It was a lot easier for me to move in that area because they wanted to give back and they didn't understand how someone could get there. So I'd love to tell them my story, because you listen to that and you say, oh, well, you know, these people just are not working. Not true. That's absolutely not true. So that's how they give their time. What I want to leave people with is this idea that you have to be embarrassed if you need. If you need something, you should look for help. You never know what your neighbor next door is going through. You know, I was coaching on that little league, and there was days that people didn't know that right after the game, I was going to go and find how we could survive for the next 2 weeks. And I never told a soul, but I should have said something. I should have said something to anybody on the East Side Little League. Somebody would have said, hey, man, come work here, do something. But I didn't. And that was because of my pride. So men, swallow your pride and ask for help if you need it in every facet in life.
That is a great, great message. George, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Really appreciate it. More importantly, thanks to you and your wife, Carrie, for all that you do with the Elisha Project.
Scott, happy holidays to you and your family. Tell the family I say hi, and thank you so much, sir.
Will do. George L. Ortiz, CEO and president for the Elisha Project. For more information, the website, ElishaProject.org. That's ElishaProject.org. My thanks to George for joining us. My thanks to producer Laura Minicucci. And most of all, thanks to you for tuning in. My name is Scott Cordesci. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Community Matters with your host, Scott Cordesci. If your group or organization would like to be part of the show, email us at communitymatters@weei.com.